All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Saturday, June 27th, 2015. Really looking forward to today's guest is Tom Kaplan, superintendent of North Hempstead Country Club. And, you know, given the major drama and excitement at Chambers Bay, I just thought it would be interesting and timely to have someone who can talk about the controversial greens that were going on at Chambers Bay. And so Tom is, I've known Tom for a little while now, really, really smart, really articulate. And again, the golf course superintendent at North Hempstead Country Club, a country club, by the way, folks, a local gem on Long Island. And, you know, when you talk about golf course architects, just listen to the three names that have touched or had a part in the history of North Hempstead Country Club: A.W. Tillinghast, not too shabby, Robert Trent Jones, and Gil Hands. So when you talk about a trifecta of golf course architects to be a part of the history of your golf club, that's not a bad list, to say the least. So we're going to burn our first break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Tom Kaplan, the superintendent of North Hempstead Country Club. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabiel has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. My guest this morning calls himself a poa farmer, but we know him better as Tom Kaplan, the superintendent of North Hempstead Country Club. How are you doing this morning, Tom?
Great, Anthony. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I want to talk about the, might as well get right to it. The U.S. Open had it all. You know, the drama, the controversy, or controversy, as they say across the pond. You know, I thought it was perfect timing to have you on this week, because we really need to sort of understand what's going on a sort of on your level, as someone who deals with turf and agronomy on a daily basis. You know, was this a simple case of bad timing for the, you know, first maybe talk a little bit about what was going on those greens from your understanding, and then whether or not you just think this was just a bad case of bad time, you know, case of bad timing, given when the POA decided to creep up, or, you know, is it a combination of things with the USGA setup and the conditions? You know, maybe, you know, I know there's a lot to pull apart there, but first just talk maybe about the greens themselves and what your understanding of them.
Sure. I mean, my understanding is everybody's, I think, leading into this to this championship was that the greens were predominantly a fescue green, of which you see a lot of over in Europe. A different texture, different type of grass than Poa Anna that they talked about a lot, and also bent grass. So I guess the perception was that we were going to be seeing a golf course that was predominantly fescue, of which it was. But then when you took a look at the greens on television and you listened to the commentators talk, and then the guys on the Golf Channel talk, you saw a tremendous amount of Poa Anna in the greens.
Right.
And that is the Pacific Northwest, and at that time of the year, you will get Poa Anna that does come up, and it does flower, and it produces the seed heads, you know, very much like you see here in late April, May, and even into the early part of June on Long Island, because about 95% of the golf courses, I would say, on Long Island are predominantly, you know, Poa Anna greens.
Mm-hmm.
Timing an issue? I think so, a little bit. But I also do think the other issue, you know, was the USGA you know, and I guess kind of what they were pushing across is it being this fesculating golf course, which it certainly was. But as you could see on television, there certainly was a tremendous amount of contamination of poa into the greens, which is common. You know, poa is a very aggressive plant. Many consider it to be a weed. I consider it to be some of the finest putting surface, you know, in the world. But on a fescue golf course, it certainly would be considered to be a nuisance, which it was. So there was a contributing factor there.
And being a nuisance, you're talking about the fact that it doesn't, like you said, it flowers and it grows at different, speeds as the other?
Yes, correct. Right. It'll grow much more in a bunch-type formation, and then it will produce those seed heads that you might commonly see in May when you go out to play. And, you know, it can create a bumpy playing surface, particularly when it becomes very dry, of which the USGA tends to keep things very much on the drier side. So, you know, that combination of timing and of the conditions, you know, create a surface where you do have some uneven growth. I mean, fescue grows one plant at a time, and it wants to grow straight up. And the poa at that time will grow out straight up and flower, which causes the unevenness in the playing surface.
Is this like it seems like over the last two events, U.S. Opens more specifically, the USGA is trying to push this, you know, less waters, use less water, firm and fast. Obviously, there's we know it's well documented the problems they're having in California and the water. And courses like Pasatiempo, if you go on, you can see before and afters of how they're, you know, trying to use water. But it seems to me that this is, you know, this is their agenda. They're pushing it hard. I mean, I'm not saying anything we don't already know. My question is, though, is can we have firm, fast, and links-type golf courses in the climate in the United States? Because to me, it seems like it's very difficult to do that, with Chambers Bay being an example of it. I mean, they did just about everything they could do, but to recreate this links-type experience. But we still have, if you want to say, conditions that are specific to the Northeast that are not, indigenous or part of the problem or part of the climate in across the pond. You agree or disagree?
No, I agree to some extent. I think the USGA does a tremendous job, and they're tremendous ambassadors of water conservation and environmental conservation, which they have to be. You know, you hinted on it out in California. They're going through extreme drought. And so the USGA and GCSAA, you know, really need to lead the charge in water conservation measures and what we can do to create golf courses that are, you know, I don't like this word too much, more sustainable, but
right.
That do take less input and that can play a little browner. And it's hard for people to accept that. I think you have some of the finest links-style golf courses in the United States, not technically, you know, links by textbook definition, but if you go out east and you play in Atlantic Golf Club or Shinnecock or National, Maidstone, Savonic, you have very much linkous elements to those golf courses, but you do find much more of a happy medium between, you know, brown and green.
Right.
In regards to water restrictions in particular, I think what the USGA has done with Del Paso, where they're playing the U.S. Senior Championship this week, is an excellent example of how you can make a golf course firm and fast, but also to place an emphasis on top-notch conditions on those greens. I mean, those greens on television look absolutely perfect, and they were a A1, A4 green, that could handle a dry down better. And you look in the fairways and in the roughs and on the tee surrounds and the teeing grounds, and it's brown and it's a little firmer. And I think that's really, you know, what the USGA is trying to push. And I think, unfortunately, with the U.S. Open, because of how good the golfers are, they try to take it to too much of an extreme. And I think it puts a bad taste in some people's mouths. And it only makes our job tougher because we then have to try and diffuse that, that kind of look and explain it and talk about how we can't have that at our golf courses because we just do not have those types of grass types or the manpower to be able to produce those types of conditions on a day-in and day-out basis.
Yeah, it's kind of like, the U.S. Open is sort of the, it's such an extreme example that people don't really get the time and money that's put into that 1 week. And so, like you said, you're left holding the ball and having to deal with trying to manage the aftermath. But I want to get back to a word you said before. You have trouble with the word sustainable. You know, that's a word that the USGA loves. Can you just talk about in terms of, you know, why you're careful of that use of the word?
Well, because anything that you do to a living plant, you know, to living organisms, you know, there has to be inputs that are made to be able to, you know, to be able to sustain what you're managing. And so when it specifically comes to sustainability, the USGA likes to center that fact around grass types and things that can be done to reduce water. And so a lot of the times they will go after, you know, grasses like Poa Anna, because Poa Anna does take high water inputs. But what they, what I feel like gets lost in the shuffle is that they do not many times show the efforts that are made by superintendents like myself to really be able to maintain a grass type that's very well suited for this area, and to be able to do it with tools, technology, and inputs that might not be any less, but are much more effective, and, you know, are much more decisions that are much better made with better environmental consciousness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I totally. And how much is technology? Because I saw you online on Twitter, you know, having a discussion with a colleague of yours. How much has technology evolved over the last, you know, 5-10 years? Or even 5 years, in terms of how you manage a golf course? How much technology are you using today?
Oh, I mean, it's tremendous, really. You know, I mean, it really started with the stent meter in terms of conditioning, you know, and now, I mean, we're using things such as firmness meters to measure firmness. But particularly when it comes to water and watering practices, the way that the technology has evolved is tremendous, and all for the positive. I mean, we use These moisture probes now out in the greens, which take out all the guesswork in terms of how much water the plant needs. We use, particularly on our golf course, we use these soil sensors that are tied into our computer so that we can measure the amount of water that's in the soil, which allows us to be able to efficiently use our irrigation so that we're basically just displacing the water loss that takes place every day. So, you know, the technology advancements that have been made have been tremendous. And I would say probably that within the last 5, 6, 7 years, I mean, it's probably saved golf courses in the Northeast that are using this technology anywhere from, you know, 15% to 20% of their normal water use per year, which is a great amount.
What do you think is coming down, you know, if you could you know, put your crystal ball? I know difficult to do, but in terms of technology, where do you see the industry going? What do you think is next or on the horizon in terms of golf course management?
Well, I think that you're just going to continue to see a trend in out-of-play areas, you know, continuing to not be maintained at this level where it's, you know, neon green all the time. I think that, you know, right now they're in the infancy stages of developing technology, GPS-based technology that allows fertilizer and chemical applications to be made based on the look of the golf course and, you know, the parameters within which you might treat the golf course. You know, and I certainly think that continued advancements are going to be made in how we better use water. You know, we use a tremendous amount of things that allow us to water more efficiently, that allow us to push water through the soil better. And so you're going to continue to see that upward trend, because water restrictions are not going to go away. They're going to continue to, you know, to have an impact on golf courses.
Do you see a time where people, and if you do, how long? I mean, to me, it seems like it's going to be a while. It just seems like when you have examples like Augusta National and places like that who have been the sort of poster child or the supermodel of golf courses, if you will, I have a hard time believing, you know, you and I understand it. I prefer the firm, fast, even browner conditions of links golf, to be honest with you, over aerial golf. But I have a hard time believing. I still think it's going to be quite some time, unless you think I'm wrong, until people will start to really appreciate firm, fast, brown, or even, like you said, just not having neon green wall to wall in our golf courses, and understanding that, hey, we don't need to maintain that. That's out of play, and let's, you know, let's take care of what we need to take care of, the essentials.
I agree with you, and I think that that is a, and I think that that's what the USGA does an excellent job in communicating out to golfers around the country that, you know, it's not necessarily so much about the aesthetics as much as it is about playability. With that being said, you know, golfers come out, and you know, in America we like green, and you know, they come home at the end of the day and they see a nice green lawn, and you know, they enjoy seeing that. They come to the golf course. They like to look at the golf course like a park-type setting. So, you know, I think really what's most important in this whole argument is communication and, you know, getting golfers to understand, you know, that brown and dry is good. And I really think that that has evolved, but it just takes time, you know. And I don't think that some people think that it can happen overnight, but it does take time. It's a slow process, and I think there's great efforts being made to do so.
Absolutely, and what a great point. You're right that people, there's the park-like, the recreational-like feeling that golfers get when they come to a beautiful golf course, and you're absolutely right. Brown does not exude like this is a lovely place, and you know, I want to hang out here on the park bench and look at brown grass or whatever the case may be. You're right. Going playing golf at a golf course is a recreational event for most 99% of us, and there is a visual appeal to the golf course, and brown undermines that, even though it might be better for the golf course in the long run and playability for the player. You're right, the visual appeal does hurt. I got to get to my second break here, but we'll more with Tom Kaplan when you get back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
La Marmite Restaurant is a Long Island landmark. The tradition remains, but the menu, music, and vibe are all new. Golfers enjoy our wine selections from the vineyards of Ernie Els, Luke Donald, Jack Nicklaus, and Jim Nance, along with music on Friday and Saturday nights. Visit our website at lamarmiterestaurant.com for more details. Choose La Marmite for your next night out. We'll make it a special one.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. My guest today is the superintendent of North Hempstead Country Club, Tom Kaplan. Tom, let's talk a little bit about Long Island winter. Obviously, depending on who you are, where you are, on the conditions that you probably saw in the spring after such a brutal winter. Talk a little bit about, or just maybe your impressions of what the effect of this winter was across Long Island, at least amongst your colleagues. What were you hearing? How bad really was it?
Well, it was a very tough winter, you know, and thankfully we are far removed from it, and some courses are still dealing with the ramifications of it. But we did have a perfect storm, per se, for some damage on golf courses from this past winter. Back in January, late January, with some heavy snows and then some heavy rains, and, you know, it created a 2 to 3 to 4 inch layer of ice underneath the grass, and that's problematic for the turf because what ice ends up doing is it ends up suffocating the turf. I mean, even though it's in the wintertime, the turf still needs oxygen to be able to survive the winter. And the ice basically creates this impermeable blanket that starts to suffocate the turf. So the general rule of thumb is that you have about 60 to 70 days under ice cover before you really need to start to become concerned. And we had a very cold March where there was some snowfall and the ice hung around. And so there was some turf loss that took place because of the extended amount of ice cover. And then also, too, there was a lot of ice damage to golf courses, in particular greens, because when we did start to melt and when we did have the ice start to thaw out, what ends up happening is this crown hydration process takes place where basically the ice will melt and it will start to run off the green or it will go into low areas, and then at night it will refreeze. So what happens is the sun hits the ice, the grass plant is almost stimulated to wake up, it starts taking in water, and then at night when it refreezes, the plant refreezes, and the ice expands within the plant, and then that ice ends up exploding, and the cells in the plant explode, which leads to turf loss. And there was some pretty catastrophic turf loss out there from that. And so that's really what ended up happening this past winter around the area. You know, I'm sure if you go out and play a lot of golf, you saw a lot of that, a lot of areas that were staked, roped off, maybe some greens that were closed, and it was predominantly from ice cover.
Yeah, I think it took some time for even Bethpage Black to have all its 18 greens open. And, you know, I never thought about that. I didn't know on the cellular level. It's hard to imagine grass basically exploding or imploding from the inside out, and that's how it basically dies. And so, you know, thank you for the lesson. It's pretty, is the ice coverage, and was that pretty much the majority of the damage? And was it, you know, what were some of the worst case scenarios you were hearing about? And do you think is there anything you can do to prevent it in the future?
Well, that is always something that, you know, that is talked about, you know, and obviously, really what it comes down to is I personally, you know, did not get, I mean, when you come into the springtime, you're so involved in your own golf course. That you know you only hear things of certain other places, and so everybody in one way or another, you know, struggled with some type of damage, you know, some more than others. Is it preventable? I do not think it's preventable, because mm-hmm. that's what people and what golfers kind of lose perspective of is we're dealing with living things, you know, and so there are certain extremes that just cannot be handled. But what we can do going forward is try to better educate ourselves and try to put research and time and effort into how can we prepare the grass in the late fall for the winter time so that we can handle the extremes better. You know, maybe that, I mean, the golf season has expanded tremendously, especially with the way the climate's become, where you have golfers that want to go out and play till Christmas time, and they want 11.5, 12, 12.5 on the scent meter right till Christmas time. Well, the grass shuts down in the middle of October. So anything that you're doing to continue to create those speeds is really working against anything that you're trying to do to help build the plant's carbohydrate reserves going into the wintertime. So, you know, there are certain things I think that will be reevaluated, you know. Mm-hmm. We have a Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association, great association. You know, we will, you know, be getting together, you know, in the fall and into the early winter, you know, to talk about some things that we can all implement on our golf courses that might help. And there's researchers out there at universities, you know, that actually do research on this type of stuff.
Yeah, I think that I find it interesting, and I applaud the collegial environment that you guys have created amongst yourselves, whether it be through the association, whether it be through social media. I love the fact that you guys are constantly communicating with each other. I think that shows that you're willing to share information in the best interest of each other and the great game of golf. But I just love the fact that you guys are constantly talking to each other about it, like, hey, heads up, this is coming, or look what I'm doing and this is helping. I think it's awesome. I think it shows just how professional and how smart you guys are in general, just the fact that you know you don't have all the answers, and it's great that you guys are constantly sharing information.
Well, and that's key, you know, and that was key to the recovery process. You know, there's a lot of great superintendents on Long Island, around the country, and communication has become just as important for us as has been managing a golf course. And, you know, communicating in particular to our memberships or to those who play the golf course, you know, exactly what's going on, you know, what it's going to take to bring something like the greens back, you know, why some greens are kept and some greens aren't. And, you know, thankfully, people listen, and people want to understand. And when people can be informed and understand, they feel a lot better. And, you know, they know that you're doing everything that you can to bring back, you know, what you once had.
Absolutely. Tom, I got to take one more break. We'll be back in 30 seconds to wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
It's here at last. Golf season. South Shore Golf specializes in golf club repair, re-gripping, and PGA golf instruction. They will not be undersold. They will match all local prices. For more information, call South Shore Golf, 631-563-2025, 631-563-2025, or check them out online at southshoregolf.net. Heading out east? How about a quick and easy stop for all your golf needs? Let South Shore Golf take your game to the next level.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. My guest is Tom Kaplan, the superintendent at North Hempstead Country Club. Tom, just wanted to finish up with something that I think that is sort of a unintended or at least a unforeseen product of an evolution of golf shoes, and that is different types of spikes and different types of soles to shoes, and some of them have created a bit of a problem for you guys, and you guys meaning superintendents who take care of the course and the conditions. Talk a little bit about some of these spikes that are leaving or becoming, it seems like to me, a bit of a problem.
Right, yes. I mean, if you look at some of the golf spikes that are out on the market right now, they look more aggressive than football spikes or soccer cleats.
Yeah, right.
And I don't really know why that has evolved. You know, I guess it's really a matter of comfort and grip. And, you know, I wear nubs, you know, and I really like nubs, and they're comfortable, and they do everything for me that I need. But, you know, the trend has been, I mean, golf spikes have become a fashion of their own. But they do cause quite a bit of damage, you know, particular brands. You know, I hate to name certain brands, but, the Adidas golf spikes in particular have been very problematic on golf courses. And Adidas has even admitted to that fact. And to their credit, tried to make changes to them. And the problem with it is number one, we're trying to maintain golf courses as firmer, faster, tighter heights of cut than ever before. And number two, we have these aggressive spikes that are now coming out on the market. You know, they are causing, you know, damage that makes it tough to keep conditions the way that we want to keep them. And I think from a golfing standpoint, it's problematic for golfers when they go out and putt and they see these large, huge imprints and spike marks all over the place.
Yeah, and it's hard enough in terms of when you think about the public sector. You have people who don't, in general, you know, golf courses have a hard time getting people to fix their own ball marks. I mean, it's hard to, you know, you don't go to a place that doesn't say somewhere along a public facility that says, fix your own ball marks, please, or fix yours at plus one. And you wouldn't need to do the plus one if everybody just took care of their own business. Now you throw in the track marks that some of these, as you say, aggressive spikes are leaving. It makes your life miserable.
Right, correct. And you know what, the take-home message really with the golf spikes is certainly not trying to discourage people from coming out and playing the game. And,
sure.
And you know, we try to get people to rake out their bunkers and to fix their ball marks, and there's an etiquette that comes with playing golf. But the take-home is really, if golfers could just be conscious about the spikes that they're wearing and take note when they're on the green to see, hey, is this spike that I'm wearing causing damage? I think we'll all have greater putting surfaces across the board.
Yeah, because that's really, at the end of the day, how they evaluate what they just experienced. And obviously, the majority of it is how they played. And if they play well, they'll evaluate it positively as opposed to if they shot 120. But like you said, that one of the things they're going to look at is the conditions and particularly the greens. The greens are the sort of, I think to the average golfer, the face of the golf course as people who don't majority, I would say the majority don't pay attention to golf course architecture or some of the other things that go into play. And so their first thought is the greens. And if the greens are bumpy or if they're ball marks or whatever, and they don't even realize they're part of the problem, not the solution, I think you're right. If we could just make people a little more self-conscious, it would be helpful for everybody.
That's right. The greens are a crown jewel. So anything that we can do to make them as good as possible from both a golfer standpoint and a superintendent standpoint, we're always going to be all for it.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I really appreciate your ability to articulate things like, you know, or things on a cellular level to people like me who don't have a clue. But I really just appreciate your time and the information you shared with us this morning.
Thanks for having me on, Anthony. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And let's continue to do so. I think it would be good for our listeners and just people in general who love the game of golf to sort of be in touch with the green side of the game.
Great. Sounds good. Have a great weekend.
You too. Enjoy. All right. That was Tom Kaplan, superintendent of North Hempstead Country Club. That's all the time we have, folks. I hope you enjoyed it. Thought it was pretty informative and really appreciate understanding the green side of golf on a more in-depth level. So I hope you did as well. It's beautiful out there. Hopefully you get a chance to play golf this morning. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.